From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
We hope you're all staying safe and sane out there. It's time for another episode of PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill, joined by Sarah Sinclair. Sarah, are you staying safe and sane these days? How's it going?
More on the safe side than the sane side. No, I'm just kidding. We're very lucky. We've got lots of space to move around, and actually took the stand-up paddle boards out for the first time yesterday. It's like 80 degrees here. So that was nice, different scenery, but yeah, just pretty much just going out one time per week for the groceries, and I'm super busy just with all my things, work, and then all my little side hustles and hobbies that I do. So there's never much boredom around these parts. Yeah. What about you? How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're good. It's same SSDD, same stuff, different day, but it's going to be an interesting couple weeks, I think. Like, places are starting to kind of relax some regulations. Even out in California, they're trying to like have the beaches open and stuff, and this guy's not going to the beach, so we'll see what happens.
That's kind of the main difference for this week is Tennessee is opening up lots of different parts of the state,
right?
And actually restaurants are open back up. There's all these different guidelines around patrons wearing masks, employees wearing masks. I don't understand.
Sure. We have that out here, like the masks out here.
6 feet away. But this is in restaurants, so it's not just limited to takeout and curbside anymore.
Kind of like eat your food with a mask.
Yeah, gyms are allowed to open back up starting Friday. So my gym is open back up, but we're not going to be going back for a little while.
Yeah.
Because it's all group fitness, and even though they're sticking to all the guidelines as best as they can, it's just still murky waters. Scary at the point.
And that's I think everyone's just got to do what they think is safest for themselves, so that's kind of how we're operating, and I hope listeners do what they think is best for them. That's kind of where I think we got to leave it at that. On the disc golf front, it should be Dynamic Disc Class Blown Open Week. If you listen to the show last week, we talked to the TD Doug Bierkus about the virtual GBO that is ongoing, and we are going to have 2010 PDGA World Champion and Emporia native Eric McCabe on the show in just a little bit. We'll chat a little more virtual GBO, but also we'll get his perspective on, he's the team manager for the Dynamic Disc squad. And then, we'll talk about the 10-year anniversary of his world title. So pretty cool. In PDGA based news, no more cancellations yet this week or any extensions of sanctioning, so yay, go team. The one bit of news that is happening, and this will kind of be a little more outward on the website on Friday, but we'll tell you now, the period now to declare your candidacy if you want to be on the PDGA board of directors is now open. You can go to pdga.com/elections. There are two spots up for voting this year. Now the elections don't take place until July 1st, but we have this couple month process of applying for the board, and then we do some vetting and some things like that, and get it all fired up and send the information out to the members, and eventually we'll have you come on PDGA Radio if you're one of the candidates, and we'll go from there. So again, it's pdga.com/elections. Sarah, are you gonna throw your name in the hat for the board this year?
No. I have way too much going on.
Yeah, it's okay.
I'm not sure I would pass the background check either. I'm just kidding.
Oh, stop.
I'm totally kidding.
No, it's good. It's you know what? These are super important volunteer positions. And the one thing, speaking of super important volunteer positions, on top of the board of directors candidates, which there are two, we also have half of the PDGA state coordinators and provincial coordinators up for election, which might be even more important than the board of directors. Don't tell the board of directors I said that, because they pay my bills. But just as important as the board of directors is the state and provincial coordinators, because they're like the eyes and ears on the ground. They help with scheduling events and giving us feedback about, you know, local CVBs to work with, all kinds of different things. So state coordinators, provincial coordinators are tremendously important volunteers. And there's a list of several that are up for election this year. If you end up being in one of those states, you want to throw your hat in the ring, we would love to have you. Again, all this information, pdj.com/elections. Democracy, it's a thing. We're going to make it happen. So, Sarah, it should be Glass Blown Open week. I should be doing this show with you from Emporia, Kansas. Instead, I am at my home that's not in Emporia, Kansas. A little bit, it's bittersweet, right? Like, I mean, you know, we all need to stay home and be safe and do the things we have to do. Like, I don't exactly want to go travel right now, but GBO week is a pretty special one. Like, it's probably the biggest, especially since the PDGA split off, you know, Pro Worlds and Am Worlds into their own separate events. It's probably like the biggest disc golf celebration people-wise of the year. So it's just such a unique atmosphere, and I do miss it, and I know a lot of other people do. So if you were meant to go to GBO this week and you didn't and you're bummed, we understand. We feel it too. And that's why we at least will do the very best we can and bring you one of Emporia's finest, Eric McCabe. So should we chat with him, Sarah?
Yes, roll that tape.
All right, let's do it. So we will have Eric McCabe, and then Sarah and I will chit-chat a little more. So we'll be back in just a moment on PDGA Radio. All right, so we had a listener actually email us a couple weeks back and suggest that we have some team managers on the show to talk about how some of the coronavirus stuff is impacting pro players. And so with that in mind, and with the fact that this would have been GBO week, we welcome Mr. Emporia to the show. Eric McCabe. How's it going? I'm dubbing you Mr. Emporia. Like, you want like a big, we could get you a sash. How's it going?
Oh, I'm interested. I actually went to high school with our mayor. So, I mean, I'm basically the mayor, right, of Emporia at this point.
Yeah,
I actually thought Rusko was the mayor.
Yeah, he might be like the governor of Kansas at this point. But
Eric, thanks for joining us, man. How are you doing? How's everything going during first of all, how's everything going for you just personally right now with everything going on?
Personally, everything's actually pretty good. Fantastic. You know, we're staying healthy. Denise and I actually got a new puppy. So that's
three. You have three now?
We have three now. Yep. Okay. Her name is Ren, and she is basically everybody that we've shared pictures with have said, yeah, you guys have a type, because it's kind of like that cattle, Australian Shepherd, you know, working dog. And we just happen to stumble across her, and it's perfect time during quarantine to get a dog. You know, you can spend time with it, you can train it. And she has basically just started shadowing Maverick, which has been fantastic. So, but everything's great here.
She's adorable. I've been following pictures.
Yeah, she's awesome. She's very,
very cool. So just on, let's talk about the team management aspect first. You're the manager for the DD pro players now. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you hearing from the athletes about their experiences right now and what kind of impact this is all having on them, not being able to tour and everything like that?
Sure. I mean, it's crazy. Fortunate enough for some of them, I'd say that this is happening now, as opposed to say when I was touring, because when I was touring, we weren't getting salaries. You know, there was really no money involved. The money you made was the money you made at tournaments back in the day. So, you know, that aspect of it is kind of a little bit more on the positive side, I suppose. But yeah, we've been staying really good and connected with them. The original plan was to have some of them come up to Emporia and kind of quarantine here in Emporia and try and get some media stuff done. But unfortunately that wasn't able to happen. We had to have some people go home and, you know, and then the travel ban and all this stuff started happening. But thankfully we live in a day where technology, you can do a lot of content at home and send it to Bobby or the guys to edit out. And so, you know, we've been doing a lot of content on that side of things, but we've also, for me personally, I've been just as busy as ever with, maybe not course design stuff, obviously, but the team manager side of things. We've been reaching out to our players and doing video chats and having group meetings. Every Tuesday, DD has always had a staff meeting, and we still are continuing to do that as if it's the norm. You know, we just all have, we do it on Google Hangouts and just kind of come and hang out with each other, I guess. But it's been a little crazy, you know, and the team, the professional side, the team, the tour team rather, they've been holding strong and doing some content. And I think we're all just kind of playing the waiting game at this point to see when are we able to get back out there and play disc golf. And, you know, we're all kind of crossing our fingers for that Portland Open to be their first opportunity to get back out on the tour and play with I'm sure some sort of regulations, you know, who knows if that's players have to wear masks or stay 6 feet away from each other what the case is going to be for that. But they're definitely ready to get out and start playing again. I can definitely tell you that.
At least from your team standpoint, is everyone at least able to get back out on the road? Like this isn't making anyone have to, you know, entirely shut it down at least when things come back.
No. Yeah. I mean, all of our tour players I'm not just DD at this point now. I'm kind of responsible for the tour players on Westside and Latitude as well.
Okay.
And I've been in communication with all of them and everybody's, you know, jonesing to get back out there. And this isn't really stopping anybody. You know, the salaries that we've agreed to pay them, we've continued to pay them.
Awesome.
You know, and we're fortunate enough at DD to be in Emporia, Kansas, and not like New York City or LA or one of these bigger metropolitan cities that's having this crazy impact that, you know, I would say 90% of us are working from home, which is great that we're able to do that. But we do have people that are still, you know, doing the warehouse and the store is still open. I mean, it's not open to the public per se, but you can do curbside pickup or, you know, the online, we're still shipping things out. So, you know, we're still staying busy as ever. I mean, if you kind of look at numbers, you wouldn't even know that there's a crazy pandemic going on. I mean, obviously, you know, in the next week as of, you know, today being the day GBO is supposed to start. So we're going to see a little bit of an impact on that. But this past weekend, a few of us got together and packed up 1,400 players pack boxes and got those shipped out the door. And we did it all on a Saturday morning. It's just crazy to see us all come together and work as a family and a team and get such a big project put together and sent out the door. Pretty cool.
I was actually just watching that video. Yeah, I was a little bit jealous. Yeah. Saw some birdie. I'm actually drinking my birdie fuel coffee right now, the cold brew.
Nice.
And there's some really cool items in there. The orange scented disc. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. But so as the founder of GBO and Emporia kind of being a ghost town right now, when normally there'd be an influx of people there, how does this station affect you personally?
Me personally, not really too bad, to be honest. You know, obviously there's going to be some sort of economic impact that the city will feel not having 1,700 people come to town for a week. But there's, you know, the city's going to hold strong. I mean, we're a strong city, you know, and we've been through a lot. Another big influx of people and cash flow for Emporia, Kansas is the DK bike race. It arguably brings more money to the community, but it's not as big, if that makes sense. It's bigger. It's a bigger event, but it's only over a 2 or 3 day period, as opposed to Glassbone Open that people start getting here the week before and late the week after. So, you know, obviously that's going to feel a little bit of an impact, but if you drive by the disc golf courses here, you wouldn't even honestly know that some of them are closed because there are still people out playing. Now they're not playing like in big groups. You're not going out and seeing like groups of 10 or 20 or there's no organized leagues or anything like that going on. You see a lot more stuff like families playing together, which I think is fantastic to see, you know, people looking for things to do, activities to do in this time and what better to get out in fresh air and in the park and do the right thing by, you know, keep your distance from people. Obviously there's ways to do it safely, but it is kind of cool to see the rise of
there's definitely
disc golfers in this time.
I was going to say there's a couple of friends of mine that have small children and they were like, which discs should we take out to the course with us? Cause they're just looking for outside things to do. And yeah, hopefully we'll see an influx of recreational disc golfers after this. So I was reviewing the schedule for virtual GBO and I know some of those events are already underway. Which one or couple are you most excited for?
Oh man. Well, there's one that I am very excited for and one that I am not so excited for. Let's start with the one I'm excited for first. So the virtual block party. Every year for GBO, I come out with a custom disc that I produce from Latitude 64. And this year was no exception. I'm coming out with what's a Fusion X. It's a new plastic that the EMAC Truth, my disc, has never been released in. And usually I order a bunch and sell them there at the block party. And usually they do pretty well. They sell out typically. And we have a nice long group of people waiting at my table by the time I get there. And it's fantastic for the collector market. It obviously helps me put a little extra money in my pocket. But, you know, this whole virtual GBO thing came about. And we decided let's do a block party and have some of the pros and vendors set up and do live on the Dynamic Discs Facebook page. And sell some discs. So I'm fortunate enough to have a time slot from 3 o'clock to 3:30 this Saturday, which is going to be fantastic. I'm really excited for that. And obviously our other touring players having an opportunity to have a platform to get on and make a little extra revenue at this crazy time. But that's one thing I'm really excited about. The one thing I'm not so excited about actually happens here in a few hours this evening on live, on our live Facebook page. It is Schustramine, I think is how Lovely. It's pronounced. It is fermented herring. So it's basically rotten fish in a can. And Bobby and I, back in 2014, I think it was, were in Sweden over the summer, and we were doing some promotional stuff and spent a couple weeks over there. And it happened to be during the summer, and it happened to fall on the week that they typically do this. So Bobby and I are somewhat veterans of the game, I guess you would say. So we've done this before, so I know what to expect. And I am not really looking forward to doing it again, to be honest with you.
So you know what to expect. How did you get roped into doing this again?
That is a fantastic question, Steve. I don't know how I got roped back into doing this again. I personally think what I'd rather see Robert McCall, you know, who backed out of it, get
McCall
up there and
should
do
be
it.
Doing this.
Absolutely, he should. 100%. So,
how much do you have to eat? Is there a requirement around?
There's not really a requirement. I think it's more of a taste, so to speak, you know. But one thing I do remember of it is very salty and very nasty. And the potent, as soon as you pop the can open, is almost as worse as the taste. You can almost start tasting it as soon as you start to smell it. It's that bad.
There's a fantastic BuzzFeed video of people trying this, and they're visibly just retching as soon as they open the can. It's terrifying.
It is.
Do you go like straight no chaser, or are you like put it on? Like I talked to Bobby and he said he was going to put it on crackers or something like that.
Yes. So what they do is they typically do like on a cracker or a flatbread with some dill and potato or chives or something. They usually mix it with something. So they're not like just typically grabbing a raw fish out of the can and eating it, which if that was the case, I'd probably be coming up with some kind of sickness this evening and probably not be showing up. But definitely.
Do you still have these from 2014 and they're just continuing to ferment?
Oh, God. I'm glad that is not the case.
Your own fermentation process?
Yeah, we're going to. Yeah, exactly. So how we got it was, you know, obviously we get a lot of shipments in from Sweden. Definitely weekly, you know, almost every other day at this point, we're getting, you know, either air pallets in or containers coming in with discs in them. And they just happened to throw a couple of these cans on one of the containers that came over. And, somewhere deep down on my YouTube page is the video of Bobby and I eating it back.
I think Bobby reposted it to Facebook recently as well.
Yeah, I think he did. So very interesting for sure. So tonight, it's going to be interesting, to say the least.
I can't wait. Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
I'm also excited, but also
I'm glad you guys are.
No, trust me, you're braver. You're braver than we are, I think.
Oh, man.
Yes.
We'll do it for the fans. We're doing it for the fans. So.
Exactly. So now you mentioned course design a little bit. Obviously, I can't imagine there's a ton going on right now, but you have that has kind of been, you know, one of your career arcs now is going into course design. Do you have any projects underway right now or what's your course design status these days?
I do have a couple in the works, I guess you would say. I've got one that's somewhat close to me here that I've been kind of working on. It's something I can get to. I can just drive straight there and kind of work on it, not have to worry about bumping into people or stopping for gas or anything like that. So, you know, I've got that one project going on there, and then a couple other, you know, irons in the fire, so to speak, that, you know, we're waiting on limitations to be lifted, or it's just kind of put on a holding pattern, you know? So, last year was a very, very busy year for my course design. I don't recall exactly how many I put in the ground just last year, but right now I have a running total of about 45 to 46 courses that I've designed in 22 states, including Canada. And obviously an end goal of mine is to be in every state. I think that'd be pretty cool to have at least one course in every single state. And I've already knocked out a couple of the more challenging ones, like California. I've got one out there. And
did you do the one in Riverside?
Alaska. I did. Yep.
Okay. I haven't gotten out there yet. I need to go play it though.
Yep. I did Riverside. And then the other one that was phenomenal and just such a fantastic time was Alaska. The one up in Wasilla area, just north of Anchorage. We went up there a couple years ago now and designed the course. And I've been working close with the guys out there at Meyer Lake on a tournament that we're hoping to happen still this year at the end of July. And it's going to be such a great event. I mean, we've got Steve-O Story down in Texas. We've got Doug Bjerkus, you know, two back-to-back TDs of the year that are the actual tournament directors of this tournament. We're taking Bobby, we're taking Anthony, myself, Paige Bjerkus, Shu. Just a handful of us are going out there and really hoping to put on a spectacular event at this kind of resort is what it is. And we're actually hosting a Friday night C-tier at 10 o'clock. So it starts at 10 p.m. and it kind of plays through early Saturday morning, which is kind of cool, you know, because it's the midnight sun. The sun never really goes down. It just kind of goes across the horizon, which if you've never experienced it, it's something to definitely experience. It just kind of feels like, from like 10 p.m. on, it kind of feels like 8 p.m. until like 4 o'clock in the morning. So it's just an eerie feeling, you know, but it's pretty cool to experience.
That's awesome. So have you come up with a signature course element that you feel like is your niche across all of these designs?
What is it? I don't necessarily think so that I've come up with any type of a niche, because obviously each piece of property is unique to its own, and just trying to utilize the entire property for the full potential of a quality course is really all I'm really want to focus on, I guess. I guess one thing I do like to do on the majority of my courses, if it allows it, is, especially if I have a lot of land to work with, is install two tees and two pins on each hole. That way, especially if it's in an area that disc golf isn't, there isn't a whole lot of disc golf around, if that makes sense. So you don't want to put in a big championship level course and a family comes out to play it and they play two holes and then leave and never play the game again. So, you know, I think installing shorter tees and pin placements potentially is very beneficial for the growth of the game, and arguably a beginner friendly, really short 9-hole course is just as important, if not more important, than putting in these big championship level courses. So, you know, there's not a single course that I would never put in. I wouldn't say, you know, I'm not going all the way over there to install a 9-hole course. You know, I mean, I traveled all the way down to Florida just to put in a beginner 9. So, I mean, there's no limit. I mean, obviously if my plate gets full, it's going to change a little bit, but there's not a course that I wouldn't put in.
I think that's super thoughtful, and we welcome you in Tennessee. You don't have a course in Tennessee yet, do
I have
you?
A private course in Nashville that somebody wanted me to come out and put in, and they didn't even really play disc golf, to be honest with you. They just had heard about disc golf and their kids played it, so they wanted me to come out, and it was a beautiful piece of property. I mean, they had horses, they had some cattle, and they just wanted a really easy family-friendly 9-holer in the ground, and it was a lot of fun going out and experiencing that side of things too.
I'm interested in knowing where that is. I'll hit you up after.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
So on the opposite side of that coin, with from beginner end to, you know, the championship level stuff, like you mentioned, obviously everything can't be championship level, but in that vein, you know, in your estimation, you're a world champion. You still play in Emporia. You've been a touring pro in the past. What is the future of pro courses look like to you? Is what we're seeing now what we're going to get? Or what do you think kind of the next step is on pro course design?
Sure. That's a fantastic question. You know, it's obviously evolved and come a long way as is, and it's only going to continue to follow that track as soon as the players get better. I mean, the younger kids are just getting better and better, which is scary to think about, that there's kids out there now that are performing at a level that they would be cashing in the pro level back when I was touring. You know, it just blows my mind to think about, but it's very good and positive for sure. But as far as the courses go, I don't necessarily feel, I think some people think that, well, in order to make this course harder, I just need to make it longer, or I just need to find an area of super thick woods and just leave as many trees as possible, you know, and make it a little bit more of a luck factor. But, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand with the growth of the sport is going to mean more spectators and more eyes on the sport. When you have these longer, tighter wooded holes, it makes it impossible for these galleries to get through there, makes it harder for film crews. Now, I'm not saying that a course like the Emporia Country Club is what the future is. That's more open, longer, you know, links style of courses, but finding unique ways to do it the right way as far as like OB goes, not littering the course with OBs like that get a little crazy on every single hole. Like, you got to have pinpoint accuracy, that kind of stuff. But a little more length, a little more strategy involved is absolutely the future of the game, I feel. Because, I mean, obviously these kids are throwing far. I mean, one of our kids, Carter Ahrens, just set the junior world record a couple days ago over, like, through, what, 624 feet or something crazy like that. Like, that just, I mean, granted, it was an air disc and it was a little wind aided, threw it up in the air in the wind and let the wind take it. But if you're able to do that, you're able to throw like a 400 foot golf shot, you know, and it just blows my mind that these guys are getting this good. But, you know, there's the argument of, do we make the basket harder? Do we make it smaller? You know, there's just so many different ways that we could go about and making the sport more challenging. And I feel like when you go online and see these questions or people debating about it, everybody's right. Everybody has the right answer. And your thoughts or your opinions on the matter are absolutely false and wrong. And that part of the game can be a little frustrating to see out there, but just roll with what we got, you know. Obviously championship level courses involve a lot of land, you know, more than a lot of people think. A lot of people have called me up and asked for a championship level course. And then I get there, I'm like, well, you know, we might be able to get like 9 holes on this piece of property. They just don't kind of grasp the thought of, well, yeah, you have 30 acres, but you know, there's a 15 acre parking lot you got over here and a fence over here. You got a sidewalk that kind of goes through the whole property. And so, you know, there's just so much that goes into it that people don't really think about. They just think, oh yeah, we got a lot of land. We could put a disc golf course out here.
So switching topics a little bit, this is your 10th anniversary of your world. And so that was just about when I was getting into the sport. And of course I knew who you were, mm-hmm. and you're one of my idols back in the day. What do you remember most about how that win felt? Let's get a little emotional here.
Oh yeah. Oh man. Obviously, it was a dream come true. I mean, that's kind of like everybody that starts the game or starts playing aspires to be the world champion. I mean, you could say that's not true, but at the end of the day, everybody wants to win that big title. And one thing I think I had going for me for that event was I had already won a major at that point in my career. I'd won the 2008 Players Cup, actually, the final year that it was a singles major. And, you know, that experience from that event definitely helped catapult me and gave me a lot more confidence coming down the stretch of a world championship. The things I remember most about that tournament in particular is always looking up and never counting yourself out of it. Cause I was never really on the lead card at that event until the semifinal round, I think. And then I kind of had a hot round and jumped onto the lead card and then had the hot round again going into the finals, or maybe Steve Rico beat me by one stroke or something like that, but had a 3-stroke lead going into the final 9. And back then, you know, you guys both know that there was a final 9 where we had the top 4 players and that was it. Let's go. This is what it's about. You know, nothing else matters except what's ahead of you right now. So I remember thinking in that entire final 9 was, don't worry about what you're shooting or going for crazy shots or anything like that. Just try to match what everybody else on the card is doing. And if you're going to lose a stroke here and there, but you could gain a couple strokes here and there as well, just playing your game, sticking to your game plan. And that's exactly what I did. And I think it was on like the fourth hole or something like that. There's this huge, crazy dogleg hole. And I think I was third on the box at that point. And both people in front of me, I think it was Felberg and Anton, both went for this crazy turnover shot to try to cut the corner. And both came up short. And I'm like, what's the point? Like, I'm just going to throw it right here like I did in the tournament. And I did. And I actually gained a stroke on everybody. And I think that part of it was definitely what made me think, yeah, I can get this. I'm going to get this. And for whatever reason, I don't know. I can't explain it. This is the only time in my career that I've ever felt this was during that final nine. I knew the title was mine. I knew I had already won. And there was nothing that anybody was going to change to stop it. And it was just this weird confidence that I had that I knew every putt that I threw up in the air was going to go in the basket or at least be close. And it was just such a crazy feeling. And I think it was hole seven. I was faced with like a 45 footer for birdie or something like that. And I just stepped up and jammed the putt and thought, yep, this is it. It's over, you know? And it was such a surreal moment and feeling. And obviously having Rusko and the rest of the DD crew there was pretty phenomenal to have. Mike Wagner from Discraft, who I was playing for at the time, was there, and it was cool to have him there. And Ralph, my dog, was there, which was really awesome to have him there, you know. And a lot of people might think that's weird, but
have you met me?
You know, Ralph is still with me today. Exactly. Yeah. I knew you would get it, Sarah. But Ralph is still with me today, and I say, you know, he traveled with me forever, you know, for a lot of my career, and I say he's seen more disc golf courses than most people have, which is probably still true to date. Sure. So having him there and the celebration after was just, it was a surreal moment for sure.
Is there anything that you plan to do to commemorate it other than eating rancid fish this week?
Oh man. That's yeah.
Sorry,
I never really thought about it. Yeah, I know. I thought, oh man, we're over it. No, not so much. So I don't know. That's a good question. I haven't really thought that much about it. It crossed my mind that it's been a decade already, which seems crazy. That it's already been 10 years that it happened. It doesn't quite seem that long ago. It does seem like quite a while ago, but not 10 years. But yeah, who knows? I don't plan to do anything crazy to celebrate it, but you know, it's definitely one of the biggest achievements I've ever had in my life.
Well, congratulations.
So. Very cool.
We celebrate you.
Thank you. Oh, I appreciate it. You want to come to Emporia and celebrate with some fish, or
you know, I'm vegetarian, so I'll pass.
Yeah. Well, you can still come get some odor, get some smell of it or something.
Stay at home orders.
Hard pass.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so whenever we have people on the show for the first time, Eric, we like to hit them before we leave with the lightning round. So I'm just going to throw questions at you, and first thought that pops in your head, give me your answer. Does that sound good?
Fantastic.
All right. Some of these are disc golf related and some of them are not. So,
All right.
Favorite course on tour that you ever played?
My favorite course I ever played on tour was in Skellefteå.
Oh, nice.
Skellefteå, okay. Sweden. Yep.
All right. Most difficult course on tour?
Probably the European Open course, the Beast.
The Beast. Very nice. Okay. This one is probably one of my favorite questions. The most overrated course on tour.
Oh gosh, that's harsh. oh my gosh, you're taking me back. The most overrated course. I hate to say this because I absolutely love this course, but the De La course.
I knew it. That one is, it's like a lover. Not that a lot of people hate it.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of people do say that.
I love the course and I actually play very well. You know, when 2011 Worlds was there, I was on lead card for the whole week and I play well there cause I throw mids and that's what I think you have to do on that course is have a good mid range game. But yeah, I think, out of everything else, I think that's the one for sure.
Okay. Favorite food on tour, like when you're out there on the road, where was the place you looked forward to eating the most?
When I was on tour, the most popular thing to do was bring your own food and cook your own food, actually. So I would say whatever we made for sure.
All right. This one's gonna hit you a little closer to home.
Okay.
More difficult hole. Ooh. Hole 17 at Winthrop. Mm-hmm. Or hole 16 at the Emporia Country Club?
Hole 17 at Winthrop.
Oh, interesting. You didn't go with the homer pick.
Yep. The reason it's more difficult is because I can take a 10 on hole 17 at Winthrop. And if I take a 10 on hole 16 at ECC, I might as well just walk off the course, because I am a firm believer in, and maybe this is the course design person of me coming out or whatever, but I'm a firm believer in not having a hole on your course that's going to ruin your entire tournament. And that's exactly what hole 17 at Winthrop is. I believe drop zones are made for a reason and they should be utilized for a reason. So the way I look at hole 16 at the Emporia Country Club, every single time I've played that hole, which has been a bunch of times, I've gone for that green. Okay. Every single time, no matter what, because the way I look at it is, if I go for the green, I'm getting a 2 or a 4. If I lay up, I'm taking a 3 or a 5, and I'm not trying to bring 5 into play at all. So go for that green every single time. If you miss, go to the drop zone and it's an easy pitch up. And one thing, now that you brought that up, I'm kind of disappointed in that we're not getting to see people play that hole this year, because we actually built a wall behind it.
That's right.
And a lot of people were kind of like, well, that's stupid. You just throw into the wall and you have a drop in. I'm like, well, you know, you don't know the whole story. We're actually going to move the pin to the front of the green. So if you do hit a wall, you have a death putt. And just because there's a 3-foot wall behind it doesn't make it a guarantee you're going to hit it. Like, I want people to come play that. Everybody that complains about that hole or that we put a wall up has never played that hole before, because it is not like it's just a throw in a dart. So
I was going to say, like, have you tried to throw for the backstop and like overshot it or anything like that?
I'll be honest, I have not played the country club since we built the wall. So, okay. but I would imagine my play on the hole. Here's like the local route on that hole. What you need to do on that hole before we built the wall, obviously, was skip it off the water onto the island. That was the shot. You throw like a fairway driver, low, hard and flat. And it's going to, as soon as it hits that water, it's going to skip straight and it's going to hit the side of the hill and pop right up on top. So that was the shot. A lot of people were trying to land on top, and that being a golf tee box, it's super slick. So you're going to get nothing but skips. So a lot of people were misplaying the hole, unless you're an eagle or a Simon or someone like that can just throw a spike hyzer at it, which is just dumb. dumb. I can't imagine trying to throw a spike hyzer at that hole.
All right, back to the lightning round questions, and this is another hot button one. Greatest disc golfer of all time.
Oh boy, well, I have to go with Climo.
All right,
I have to go with Climo only because the 12 world titles. I was there when he won a lot of them, and I knew the competition back then was just because it's not as deep doesn't mean it wasn't as intense at the top.
Okay, cool. All right. If you were going to play a sport besides disc golf, what would it be?
I would be a professional fisherman.
Ah, that's the first time we've heard that answer.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Ooh, to fly.
All right. If you hadn't gone into, you know, professional disc golf and stayed in this field, what would you be doing for a living?
Great question. It's really hard for me to say because I have been doing this for a very long, long time. I started playing in high school, basically. So honestly, it's really hard to say what I'd be doing. But honestly, I'd probably be living somewhere in Texas, because that's where my entire family moved to was Texas. The reason was my brother was he's a golf professional. He actually is the general manager at a Old American and Tribute down in the Colony, Texas. And he got married and had a kid early, and my parents wanted to be closer to the grandkid, which makes perfect sense, because I was just in a Honda Element traveling around the world, just being me, throwing frisbees in parks. And they knew I wasn't planning on having kids anytime soon. So they followed the grandkid, which makes perfect sense. So I don't know. I don't know what my profession would be, but I would definitely most likely be living somewhere in Texas.
Okay. All right. If you could have dinner with one person, living or dead, who would that person be?
Off the top of my head, I'm going to go with Paul Rudd.
Oh, nice. He's not too far. He's from KC, right? He shouldn't be too far from you there.
Yep, he's KC. I'm a huge Paul Rudd fan. I love every single thing he's ever done. Yeah. So.
It's hard not to be. He's right up there. All right. You're stuck on a desert island, and you can only listen to one album ever again.
Man.
What's it going to be?
Oh, probably a greatest hits of the 80s. Particular artist, but for whatever reason, I've been on this 80s kick lately. And
are we like 80s rock, 80s pop, 80s everything?
80s everything. I mean, I have SiriusXM in my truck, and that's pretty much all that I listen to when I'm in there now is 80s on 8, and they kind of do the top 100 countdown from that week every single week, and it's whatever it is, like 81, 82, whatever it is. But definitely something from the 80s.
Okay. I already know the answer to this question, but it's the one we end with every time. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Yeah.
Easy.
We knew that one.
Easy.
Yeah. Well, hey, Eric, thank you, man. We appreciate you coming on the show. It was a pleasure, and good luck with the fish tonight.
Yes. I'm going to need it.
Yeah, definitely. So
tell Denise that we say hello.
I will. I absolutely will.
And all the dogs. My goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, and of course.
All three of them, for sure.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
That was Eric McCabe, and we'll be back here in just a minute. All right. Thank you again to Eric McCabe. Three dogs now. It's a lot of dogs. How many? Yeah, wait, you have three dogs, right? Or do you have two? You have three?
We have three. Yeah, they caught up to us.
Oh, gosh. that's how many cats we have. We're definitely more on the cat side of the cats or dogs conversation.
Two dogs?
We also have two dogs.
Okay, that's five.
And a 9-year-old, which that's a whole other ball game.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah, we spend a lot on pet
especially
food
now.
And people food. Yeah, the homeschooling.
Wait till she gets older.
No, I know. Well, she's just carboholic. So we were getting a little sketched out at first when things were flying off the shelves, there was no pasta. We were like, oh no, how's this
What's
kid
she
going
do?
To survive? Yeah, no, she's okay. She's actually, you know what? It's been pretty cool. Like during some of this, like we've gotten her to kind of eat a little more like real people food. Like she's eating more like chicken and pork and not just like the kind that is breaded and put in the microwave.
That's a good
She'll
thing.
She'll still eat that. But yeah, she's been dabbling. So
nice.
Yeah. But good to have Eric on the show. I honestly I kind of share his sentiment. It does not feel like it's been a decade.
No, I mean that he didn't say it, but when he was talking about that in the interview, to me, I was like, man, I'm old. Cause that's right. I told him that's right around the time when I was getting into competitive disc golf, I guess 12 years ago. But, he was definitely one of the first people that I was like, Eric McCabe, never going to meet that guy. You know, he's like a rock star celebrity in my book back then, still is. So it's super cool. And it just makes me feel very old and weathered as well.
Oh gosh.
I hope you find something to do to celebrate though. I was gonna maybe I'll message Denise and say that we talked about a celebration.
Yeah, I think when did that Worlds take place? Was that a June or July Worlds?
I'm not completely sure.
I most Worlds back then I think were. Let's see if we can figure this out. I can go to Eric's page here. I wonder if he could maybe go and do like another trip. It was Lemon Lake. He could do a little throwback trip to Lemon Lake if things are all open and good to go. I think that'd be super fun. Like go kind of like and DD's always doing different content. Like they could have a fun time doing doing some content with that one. Let's see. We are at where it is. It was in July, end of July.
That was Sam's year as well, right?
It was whose?
Sarah Cunningham.
Let me see. I did not click it. I think you're right.
If so, I'm a absolutely terrible friend. Okay, I need to text her right
now. Well, at the time, Stan Hope, right?
Yes. Yeah. Stan
yeah,
Hope.
Yeah.
Okay. I need to wish her a happy 10 years. I'm sure she's just waiting cool. around till her friends realize that it's been a decade.
It's pretty
probably
interesting.
Not. She's probably forgotten by now.
Looking back at like Eric's year that year, he had a pretty good season, man. Like he also won the Kansas City Wide Open.
Nice.
He won the GBO that year. He won the Texas State Disc Golf Championships.
Dang. He didn't mention all those.
Well, I mean, they weren't like those were they were all A tiers then. You know, he had a couple top tens at NTs and stuff, but good year. He came in seventh place at the on the NT series that year. So
very nice.
Anyway, all this stuff is always fun to like go down memory lane and check that stuff out. So again, appreciate Eric coming on the show. Sarah, I think that's about it for this week. Honestly, pretty short and sweet. Like it was just kind of the interview show. You got anything else? Got any shout outs?
Just that if you were not planning on going to GBO, I mean, I wasn't planning on playing, but it still is really interesting to get involved in the virtual GBO events that they're having this week. So make sure to check out on the Glassblown Open Facebook page. They're posting actually right about an hour before recording this on Wednesday night. They were doing the pro panel and they had Kristen Tatar. She dyed her hair blonde. So she came on the screen and I was like, who is that? I had no idea who it was. Who else was there? Simon was on.
Simon Lazat, Paul Macbeth. I have it on my screen right now. Okay. Albert Tom, Nate Albert Sexton, Tom, Chris Nate Clemens. Sexton. Yeah.
I didn't get to see all of them because I watched a few minutes of it, but that was super cool. And then they've got, I wonder if Eric has eaten the fish yet. I have not seen that.
So it looks like Bobby Brown like was doing the first, they did a thing. I think maybe he's just pumping it up. I don't think they're quite live, but I think it's about to go live like as we're recording this.
Okay. But just, just a plug to, even if you weren't planning on going, if you were planning on maybe being a couch spectator during this week, you can still do that just in a little bit different fashion and make sure to check out all the little events and media things that they're doing on their Facebook page. And
yeah, it's all as if you don't follow them already, because they're one of the top Facebook followers on for disc golf, but it is facebook.com/dynamicdiscs. Very hard to figure out there. But I kind of want to watch the Sir Strumming tasting, but I kind of don't.
Maybe I'll watch it tomorrow when I'm not trying to eat my dinner.
Yeah, there we go. Exactly. So, no, it should be fun. So, and again, all this stuff is over on the DD Facebook. They're doing a great job. All right. So, I think that's it then, Sarah. So, until next week, we appreciate everyone sticking with us and listening. Leave us a review, share the show with your friends, and all that good stuff. So, for Sarah Sinclair, I'm Steve Hill. This was PDJ Radio. Be good to each other, and we'll talk to you soon.